I'm here at Luxman Ireland House, NYU, in our home at 1 Washington Mews, sitting with someone who, this time last year, I'd find it hard to believe that I would be a year down, that we've been doing the Luxman Ireland House NYU Radio Hour for a full year, and I wanted to mark our first year anniversary of being on air by chatting to the person who made this possible, the person who had the vision and the generosity of time and spirit to see Luxman Ireland House NYU as a great medium through which academic broadcasting and educational and ethnic broadcasting on the Irish experience could kind of pass through. Of course, I'm speaking about Mr. Adrian Flanley, someone who is well known in the Irish community and the New York community more generally over, I won't say how many decades, Adrian, but multiple decades. Welcome, first of all, and thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to come in and chat to me today ahead of your own programme. A year in, don't be too hard on me, but how happy are you with how the Luxman Ireland House NYU Radio Hour is going? Is it... Tell me how it's living up to your expectations of what you hoped we would do.
It's exactly as I had hoped for, as I knew. And by the way, Dr. Miriam Nyhan, happy first anniversary on radio.
Thank you.
It's great. This is what I had dreamed of for a long year. And knowing... that in this house, Luxman Ireland House, there is a bottomless pit, a trove of treasure that will be here, and it will be part, very, very much a part of the history of Irish America. Now, as you present your programs, it adds that particular aspect of what I was hoping would happen, is that you are able to present issues of today and have those complement the great trove of oral archives that indeed has been provided by Luxman Ireland House. And it is, again, if we go through all of America, or indeed outside of Ireland, there is a great shortage, particularly in this day, of a medium where you can actually, you know, present it to people so that they can hear firsthand, without coming to this amazing Luxman Ireland House. There is no other medium that can indeed transmit and make available to everybody what is here, and it's fantastic. It's huge.
Adrian, when Luxman Ireland House NYU took over this hour on WNYE 91.5 FM in the Tri-State area, you and I both agreed it was kind of an easy or a soft transition, where literally from one week to the next we took over here, and we really didn't make a fuss of that. We didn't announce it formally, and I kind of wanted to use this opportunity for the benefit of our listeners, and indeed for me at this point in time, now that we are up and running and going from week to week with this program. Can you tell us a little bit about the history of your relationship with WNYE and this programming of Irish programming, which you were doing for, what, 4 decades before we took over?
45 years. I started in radio 45 years ago at a time when I was the new kid on the block. Irish radio had, in fact, played a very, very much a part of the Irish community, the Irish American community, and in fact, Irish radio was very much a part of community and neighborhoods. We found when I came here first that a lot of people who listened to Irish radio, and I should point out that Dorothy Hayden Cudahy and her father before her, the McGurks from Dublin, and for some listeners you will probably remember Terry Long. There were a number of Irish radio programs which existed, and they were very popular, not again just to Irish and Irish Americans, but to you know, the neighbors, to the other ethnic groups, to the Jewish communities, to, and they really sometimes I think that perhaps the other ethnic groups didn't have that much choice, because Irish radio would be blaring throughout the neighborhoods. It was not unusual when I came here, and I did come in 1959, to go through some, not necessarily very Irish neighborhoods, but to go to neighborhoods and to hear Irish music and to hear all of this, and you had to, you know, sometimes have to stop and figure, wait a minute, is that a record that is playing? Is that something? But the Irish music in particular was in the air. Because of the time that was in it, there was very little news. News from Ireland in particular would usually arrive about a week late. That may be difficult for some people to understand, but we did not have obviously the means to get news live, or so most of the news that we would read in the newspapers was a week old, and it would be cost prohibitive on radio at that point to do telephone link ups or whatever, and so it was radio. Irish radio was very popular here, and the being young and cheeky, I knew that doing exactly what everybody else was doing was not there was not going to be a career in that. But I did feel that a lot of things were happening both in Ireland and here that should be shared with an audience, and I felt that if I started a talk radio program, that surely a great number of people would want to do and would want to continue that tradition from once it got off the ground. And so actually it took a long time for me to find Dr. Miriam Nyhan. 45 years to be exact. It is something that, as I say, it was new territory. Very few people in the beginning thought that it was a good idea. Considering that at that very during that very period, I was also involved as a musician, and so that I would be playing music with great names at the great band leaders at the time, like Mickey Carton and my dear friend John O'Neill, who's still at the ready. If there is a function or a benefit or whatever, so people would meet me at all of these venues, like Gaelic Park and the Irish dance halls around, and say, "You talk too much, you know, and your interviews are too long, and nobody really wants to hear all that stuff." And actually, it took a number of years to try to make that a part of our own history. God knows, I love music. I love all kinds of music. But at that time, when I was getting off the ground, I was much more inclined to interview musicians and artists and band leaders to hear their story and how they got into the business to begin with. And I've left open another area where somebody would say, you were talking to Tommy Makin for 20 minutes and you didn't let him sing a song. Tommy Makin had plenty of opportunity to sing everywhere else. But the Tommy Makins and Frank Pattersons and, the Clancy brothers, they were delighted to have an opportunity to talk about their experiences. So I learned somewhere along the line that if I have one microphone for myself, and if I can provide some microphones for those who have a story to tell, then I would have a fairly easy job, and it has been a great job.
So you were essentially, Adrian, from early on then, you know, collecting oral histories and folklore and asking them about their experiences without, like, that's how we would label it or call it now, but you were doing it kind of instinctively.
Instinctively. And I also found that, looking over the archives, and I've had some very rare opportunities to, to get what were more sound bites than interviews from presidents of the United States, for vice presidents, for ambassadors, and one thing. But when somebody asked me, "What was your most interesting interview?" I'm at a loss, because I find that all interviews are very interesting, but you have to, in my opinion anyway, if you invite a guest to your program, then it is kind of unimportant whether you agree with your guest or you don't, but you have to let that guest tell their story. Mm-hmm. And you have to respect whatever opinions they have. It's not necessary to say, "Jesus, I couldn't disagree with you more." You don't invite a guest into your house and then use that opportunity to, as we say in the west of Ireland, to ballyrag them. That's not, that's not what it is.
So when you started in the early 70s, it would have been then?
1970.
Right. Mm-hmm. Do you So when I came here 9 years ago, Adrian, very quickly it was clear to me in terms of navigating Irish America and particularly Irish New York that the Adrian Flannelly Show and the role you provided and still provide is a very important, almost like a clearinghouse for information, for endorsements. I don't mean that in a narrow sense, but in a general sense, and a portal of information. But that didn't happen overnight. What I would love to get a sense of from you is, was there a particular moment or interview, or was there a particular period of interviewing where you got to that point? Do you know what I mean? That didn't just happen. That took, it must have taken a while in terms of establishing a reputation or something. Is are there any reflections on that?
Yeah, I'm still working on it.
Right. It's a work in progress.
It's a work in progress. No, I probably throughout my career, one of the primary benefits that I witnessed was that we had a lot of other sources of information which was coming through. We had, you know, Irish newspapers, some of them around for a long time. Well, the Irish Echo was pretty much after a few years after I started in radio. The Irish Echo was the only surviving newspaper. And then, obviously, we had the Irish Voice came into play, Irish America magazine, which was, again, singularly, in my opinion anyway, became the entree to Irish America at every level. Irish America played a tremendous role in that. Irish newspapers continued to do what they do best, and so it was. I was able to see and respect the all the print media, and I had the best of it, because whereas print media really have to tell it like it is, and they have to give a much more balanced profile of what's happening both in Ireland and here. I didn't have to do that. I felt that I've never felt that I had to take sides with anything, or you know, editorial content would or my own opinions would become you know, much less important than actually because of radio, and because people should hear what the news is. They should be able to decipher for themselves what's interesting, what's not. But when it comes down to it, people who have stories to tell, and I have yet in 45 years to meet somebody who does not have a story to tell, and it becomes a unique opportunity to be able to sometimes have to drag them out of, you know, drag it out of them. Or in others, you could I've joke for years about sometimes you get a guest and you open the microphone, you can go down and kick the tires and put quarters in the meter, they're off and running, you know. But it's it is the type of thing that probably comes back to the establishment of Glucksman Ireland House. That was a great day for Irish America, that actually we were going to have a very specific academic gracious gift from Loretta Brennan Glucksmann and her husband Lou to take and to capture and to be able to distribute the wealth of tremendous Irish culture and all of that. It's terrific.
Are there particular topics, Adrian, that you've covered, or particular guests that you've had that have resulted in kind of very extreme responses, or are there particular subjects, like I don't mean you to specifically go into them, but topics of religion or societal issues,
yeah,
or cultural issues to do with the Irish and things, do you see a pattern in those things?
I think that on reflection, didn't have to go too far away to find topics that are still unresolved. Northern Ireland, the Troubles, immigration, the immigrant rights, immigration reform, which very specifically affects a lot of our community. There are topics, of course, there are wonderful guest authors and artists, and but across the board, if one would say, well, what do you think the program contributed to? I would have to say Ireland, Northern Ireland, and immigration would mm-hmm. be the two that are still ongoing. We've seen highs and lows. Obviously, we have to be aware and are constantly reminded that the peace process in Northern Ireland is still a process. Hasn't been. That's not a done deal. And on immigration, we have to respect that immigration doesn't have to do and is not peculiar to the Irish. But if we are, and from whence we came, if we can't take care of our own, then we should find another area, just go off and become wealthy and don't care, mm-hmm. whatever. So I never had to make that choice because that wasn't going to happen anyway, so I figured I'd better stay in the comfort zone.
How significant, Adrian, has the advent of the internet been to what you do on a day-to-day basis, or even more generally, for I suppose we're moving away slightly from, because now everyone has access to instant
Absolutely.
News. How has that shifted how you do your programming or how you see radio more generally?
I think that radio is a medium in itself. I don't think that it is affected too much one way or the other by. I am delighted, obviously, that radio programs that for many decades we would have to record live programs and then figure out how to distribute those to radio stations throughout the nation, that the advent of the internet was and is something that it's not. I don't find it to be a threat. If anything, I find it to be terrific. I'm not thrilled about certain aspects of it, with all respects to Google. If I'm in an interview and if we somebody sends a text message or an email, almost instantly saying you got that all wrong. The right answer is thus and such. That doesn't bother me one way or the other, but as we know, you know, if you want to know anything about anybody, or if you're whether that's living or dead, Google is, and the internet can provide information. It would be very silly of me and you to, as you go forward, to enter any competition with that at all.
And I suppose what it just means, in some way, you know, we're called on less to do in terms of the type of programming, in particular, you do, Adrian, as well now, is it's less as an informational source, because people have access to that information now, but it just means that we can focus on other aspects of what it means to be Irish in New York, etc., etc. You know, yeah, you can Google and find out, you know, you can use any search engine, not to be saying Google some totally free advertising, but any of the search engines that we use, we can find out information pretty much about any topic. But one of the things we know here, and you know from your work, is that there are so many individuals and organizations and issues that don't make it to the internet or not documented. And in particular, I'm thinking about our oral history project, where we explicitly go out and try and capture the experiences and the voices of people who wouldn't normally be documented for various reasons. Yeah, do you have something to say on that?
What I wanted to say on this one here is I want to take this opportunity to take a good swipe at the search engines, in the sense that the search engines do not provide, it's not a segment of the Bible. There is a lot of misinformation that's out there too, that people can take, you know, as gospel. And at the end of the day, as far as our careers in broadcast, it doesn't make one whit of difference anyway, whether you're off, you know, whether that's on dates or times or whatever. You know, the great medium, think it's fantastic, but what we do, I think, is, again, we have microphones. If we only open them to ourselves, then you know, not going to last too long.
Well, you know, one of the things, Adrian, that we are so delighted about with the Glucksman Ireland House NYU Radio Hour, and, you know, because of your vision, is that we are actually archiving, recording and archiving everything for this radio hour, for the Archives of Irish America. So in that way, it's not just about what goes out between 9 and 10 every Saturday, or what's on the internet for someone to catch up on later. But for posterity, it's going across the park here into an archival system, which is, you know, one of the best in the world. And, you know, at some point in time, those visitors, those people who've passed through Glucksman Ireland House, and indeed, one of the great things over the last year, Adrian, and it really has been a learning curve in terms of, for me personally and for us as an institution, one of the great things that I can see already in it, and there's great potential that we'd further like to maximise, is how we're not even just getting to interview people who are coming specifically to Glucksman Ireland House. You know, we find out that someone's coming to New York and they might be going to Columbia, heaven forbid, or they might be going to some other institution, or they're here on a research trip. You know, you've heard interviews of scholars who are, you know, here on sabbatical doing their research, and who have given us the time and, you know, have been generous in their time and spirit and coming down and sharing with a wider community insights into in usually Irish American history, literature, music, culture. I mean, it's really a phenomenal way and a unique way of capturing history. You know, we're kind of making history. I know it's cliche to say that, but we are making history in terms of what we're doing for the program. And I know that
couldn't agree more.
Yeah, and I know that's part of what you saw, and when you first talked to us about, myself and Joe about it in particular, you saw that potential faster than we did. You know, we were we're kind of doing what we were doing and not really fully seeing how much we could harness for the radio and for the archive at the same time.
The in my wildest dreams, and I think many listeners will know this, is that just to conceptualize what Glucksman Ireland House has done every day since the day the doors open has been recorded. It is there. The number of academics who have actually come and contributed, and to know that was not just for the moment, that this was captured again for history, for posterity, is one of the greatest gifts that we have. I can think of another one that comes to mind, and I'm delighted to also be a supporter and be part of it, is that in Quinnipiac University, and what John Leahy and what Quinnipiac University has done in establishing the Great Irish Hunger Museum in Hamden, Connecticut. The Institute, Great Irish Hunger Institute, these are, such tremendous undertakings that it is marvelous to be in a position just to let people know that they exist. And so in that sense, I feel very privileged, and I've never, it would be a luxury for me to think that other than having access to microphones, other than having the privilege of broadcasting, now not only on radio, but through social media, and I would be the wrong person to ask in terms of, well, how do you get it on your iPhone or whatever? Not my job. But it's there, and it's great. And I want to say again, happy anniversary to you and to Glucksman Ireland House, and definitely the Glucksman Ireland House Radio Hour is a rip roaring success already. It can only go from strength to strength. But you're doing everything that I assumed you would do.
Thanks, Adrian. It's nice to hear that. I mean, it's difficult to say this without kind of sounding like you're trying to, that you're, you know, you are being cliche and things like that. But in my 9 years here at Glucksman Ireland House, in various roles, coming first as a doctoral student and transitioning into oral history work, becoming a member of the faculty team, and most recently wearing an administrative hat, it's allowed me a unique insight, Adrian, into how this kernel of an idea that originated with the late Lou Glucksman and Loretta Brennan Glucksman, sometimes I say to myself, imagine our community without Glucksman Ireland House here. not just through the opportunities for undergraduate students and graduate students to undertake Irish and Irish American studies in a formalized manner in one of the leading institutions in the United States, but outside of those confines, the public events programming, which welcomes in, you know, 100 plus people and more at times when we have to move to bigger spaces, where we're able to showcase the best of Irish and Irish American scholarship, performance, arts. It's amazing to see that reach. And through the radio program, I really feel like, in a way, we've filled out those various tentacles, Adrian, and with the radio program. And I know you and I have said this, but to remind people that we're allowing listeners through this show hear what's some of what happens here at Luxman Ireland House. If they're confined to an apartment and they're up in the Upper East Side and they can't get down to us, or they're in Nebraska or they're in Ireland or somewhere, and you just expand that community in a manner with the internet. You know, I asked you about the internet. You know, this is why, you know, the internet is one of the greatest inventions ever, because it makes the world so much smaller.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You're from, Adrian, and I let you go soon because I know you're getting antsy and this is a long time for me to be interviewing you, and it's daunting for me to be interviewing you because you're usually the one doing the interviews. But just in chatting to you today, Adrian, I suppose I didn't really fully think of it before, but a reverence for education and learning has been part of your family history. If I think back to your uncle, who unfortunately I didn't have the good fortune to ever know, Paul O'Dwyer, who was a great mentor here for my colleague Marion Casey, and for everything we do here at Luxman Ireland House. And I'm particularly thinking of his role in the great major collection of Irish essays, the New York Irish. I think without him that book wouldn't have come about, and what we know of Irish America and Irish New York through that collection of essays, it changed our world in terms of the literature and filling a gap. But your grandfather, if I remember correctly from Paul's biography, was a teacher as well, who was originally from Cork.
Yeah. We never passed up an opportunity to remind Corkonians that our grandfather couldn't make a living down in Cork, so he had to come up to Pohola in County Mayo to get a job. That usually irks Corkonians, but we never passed up an opportunity. I'm glad I had a chance not to.
Which goes against my own lineage to allow you do that, Adrian. But I just wanted to, like, do you feel, I mean, and I know they're, like, you've had you've siblings and things like that where they were teachers and things like that. I feel like there was an emphasis or an encouragement of learning in over the generations.
Absolutely, over the generations. And indeed, since we did mention Paul O'Dwyer, my uncle, who actually took a whole slew of us from Ireland, from the Durkins, Frank Durkin and Aidan Durkin, the Burns from Kilkelly, and the Flannelys, took us here to become part of America. It was a tremendous eye-opener, and for me in particular, coming here at age 17 and learning for the first time that civil rights and human rights, and that in fact everything was not hunky-dory in Northern Ireland, the place we used to go for our holidays, and the awareness here the Mehel concept, where people actually, without gaining either monetary compensation or, for that matter, much credit, some of the hardest workers that we've had here never have been singled out for what they have done, And but there was no better place to come to than New York, and definitely from point of education and for the meaning of education and how that played into all of our lives was tremendous. It didn't have to be all formal education. Some of us lived that education through, through our growing up at home and growing up in our own community.
Mm-hmm. And you've continued that in a very practical way in your career, Adrian, I think, in terms of your programming and you know, a great recent example of it is you're seeing the legacy in terms of the radio programming that you gave to us here at Duxbury Ireland House. As we come towards the end of our chat, Adrian, I'd like to ask you, we're in 2015 now. There's a lot of talk at the moment of us remembering 100 years ago, almost to the day soon, a great Irish New Yorker in Jeremiah O'Donovan Rossa.
Absolutely.
Was brought back to Dublin for a funeral, which I suppose it's overstating, say it changed the course of history, but in terms of what comes next with 1916 and the Rising and how O'Donovan Ross's funeral sets the tone for what will come next. We're 99 years out from the Rising, the Easter Rising, and we're facing into a period where there'll be a lot of talked about the history of it and we commemorate. And I suppose what I'd like to get a sense of from you, Adrian, is how Irish America is positioned vis-a-vis Ireland 100 years after the Rising. You know, is it still a work in progress? One of the things, I'm reading a lot of historical documents at the moment, Adrian, for my own research on the period and some of the projects that we're working on, and I found a fascinating snapshot, and it made me think about how little times have changed in a way. It was a recollection of someone who knew Tom Clark when he was here in New York, Tom Clark of the Proclamation of the Republic fame, Thomas J. Clark, and it was a recollection of someone who knew him, and he talked about this interaction where a young Irish guy came over and asks Tom Clark which Irish organization he should join, because he didn't know politically and practically in terms of helping him. You know, he was basically the anecdote is an insight into how Irish immigrants and the Irish people today try and navigate or learn about Irish America. Because some of us come over and think, well, I'm from Ireland, so I know Irish America.
Yeah.
But Irish America is a very different animal to being Irish in Ireland, where you're never really challenged on your sense of Irishness, because we're all Irish and we kind of self-identify, or at least historically. So that's a very long-winded question to ask you about your sense of the relationship between Ireland and Irish America, and indeed the United States more generally, as we look at this kind of moment in time.
I think the Irish, including myself and most people I know, when we had the opportunity to come here, and as we melded into the American society, two things happened. Number one, we learned from Irish America and Irish Americans that it's absolutely very proper to maintain your affiliation with Ireland and be concerned about Ireland. But Irish America, I believe anyway, has done more for the embellishment of a great country and than any other place in the world. I can't possibly imagine that those who've immigrated to other parts of the world could have the tremendous pride in Ireland that Irish Americans have, and I think it's our job to measure up to that standard and not vice versa.
So when you came here at 17, Adrian, what did you do? Just kind of keep your head down and learn and watch what was going on. There's a great quote in your uncle's biography that I often use. It's in particular, he's talking about how when he joined the Mayo Men's Association in, I think it was in the mid-20s when he came over. Would that be right?
Yeah, yeah. We'd have to check with John Garvey and
When he came over, there was an old man of the organisation, Barrett was his last name, and he said to Paul, watch and listen and learn before you say anything. I'm paraphrasing.
Yes.
Is that the kind of sentiment you had when you came over here first?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, actually, nobody encouraged somebody of my age to express an opinion anyway. And that same uncle, Paul O'Dwyer, I remember one of the... He had lots of advice. Most of it I ignored. But he, again, I'm paraphrasing, but he said, when you are in any company in debate or discussion, it is a sign of tremendous and great wisdom to say nothing.
Just sorry, Adrian, to indulge me on this. Not to make this an interview about Paul O'Dwyer, but in thinking of him there in chatting, for me, he's a great role model of an Irishman who came here in that. And this is what I'm learning a lot about the Irish people who were here. And by Irish, I mean Irish-born and Irish-Americans who were here in 1914, 1915, 1916 in the run-up to the Easter Rising. They were very Irish. They spoke of an Irish Ireland, the you know, sense of moving towards home rule, then seeing that home rule really wasn't enough and going beyond what was aspired with home rule. And the reactions to the executions and things like that. I'm seeing individuals, and I think your Uncle Paul falls into this category of people who are very committed to Ireland, but they're also people of the world, and there was a sense of universality that they were interested in the struggles of others as well. You know
Absolutely.
What I mean? That you can be a proud Irish-American or a proud Irishman or Irish woman, but not to the exclusion of the plights of other people. And would you agree? I mean, Paul O'Dwyer is a great example of that.
Yes, and I fully agree with that. And also, but there is another caveat. It is okay whether you're speaking of civil rights, human rights, in Ireland or Northern Ireland or with our own history. But there's also, it's okay to be concerned and to help in whatever way possible, whether that's in Northern Ireland or whether that's in immigration matters. But we are not exclusive. If we think we are, I think it is, not only are we fooling ourselves, but I think it comes back to a phrase, you know, in the old catechism, do unto others. And if we don't get that right, then I think we're dripping ourselves.
Well, in the spirit of a place that was inspired by an Irish-American and a Hungarian Jew in the great New Yorker, Lude Luxman, Adrian, thank you again for taking the time out to mark this very special event for us, the first anniversary of the Luxman Ireland House NYU Radio Hour. And let me formally thank you for this gift. I hope that we've lived up to your expectations over the last 12 months and that we will build and continue to learn and grow as the programme develops. And God, I wonder if I'll be sitting here talking to someone in 40 years' time talking about me being passed the torch on from you.
Listen, I'm here primarily because I, you know, really want to plant that seed, which we talked about this time last year. When are you taking over the rest of my program?
We're definitely finishing up now. Listen, Adrian, thank you so much. I think this is the first time that I formally had you on the Luxman Ireland House NYU Radio Hour, and it's been worth the wait, and I'm delighted that we're doing it on this occasion. And I suppose I'll let you back now to get ready for your own show. Thank you so much, Adrian.
Congratulations, and you're doing an amazing job.
Thank you. We're coming towards the end of the programme. My name is Dr. Miriam Nighan-Gray, and I'd like to thank you for tuning in to This Irish American Life. We come to you every week in collaboration with Irish Radio Network USA, care of Mr. Adrian Flanley. You can tune in to us on WNYE 91.5 FM in the tri-state area, and worldwide on www.nyuirish.net/radiohour, as well as on irishradio.com. If you'd